Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now on with Monkey Tennis.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And this is the beauty of podcasting, the freedom of the medium.
Kukumpa.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
Fireworks. Don't muck about.
Trees are my pawn.
Monkey tennis?
Ready, steady, fuck off.
Scratch me!
Are you being served?
Monkey tennis?
Excuse me, your dog's taken my dog's stick.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
Monkey tennis?
Yep, absolutely. Yep, 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 absolutely.
Generally, I think new ideas are bad.
Monkey tennis?
Why not consider chips?
You must come and stay in the barn.
Fuck off. Riddle me that, you nutters. Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk. Nah.
Monkey tennis?
From the host house.
Keep me down, love.
Hello and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Filling hungry bums with hot food.
Nick Alder.
Lynn, no matter how much I want you to change, I don't think 5K is going to do it.
And Tom Stab.
Fresh from the microwave, I got a piping hot lasagna with a pint of Guinness and I thought, it doesn't get more British than this.
So welcome to another Monkey Tennis. We are continuing our journeys to Alan's Oast House, reviewing his podcast episodes, which you can find on Audible, of course. And we're up to episode 12, involving a trip abroad.
Now, this is interesting because we know Alan is quite a contrary figure, a bit of a hypocrite, maybe. But as we know, one of his most famous lines from I'm Alan Partridge Series 2, he hates American things, and yet here he is, fresh from a holiday in Los Angeles.
And we're also led to believe that he regularly holidays in Los Angeles as well. This isn't his first trip.
I think there's lots of hypocrisy that runs through this, given he's talked about the British being culturally choked by the Americans, and then the amount of Americanisms he drops throughout this episode, very much poured out on that.
The first thing I noted is that he got a taxi from Gatwick. So a taxi from Gatwick to Norwich is 3 hours and 151 miles. That is going to be so expensive.
And also, don't we hear the taxi driver has essentially dropped him at the door? But in episode 9 of Oast House, Alan talks about not even giving out his address to taxi drivers. So more hypocrisy there as well.
He makes them drop him at the edge of a field, doesn't he?
Yeah, he runs through the field.
There was the storm episode where he doesn't even want the taxi driver to see the code for the gate or something as well, right?
Yeah. Also, I mean, that's made a very long cab journey when you consider it sounds like the driver's been pitching him ideas the entire way. So, the cab driver's smart idea is mugs with slogans. I did wonder what Alan must have said to him about
his occupation in order to be getting pitched these ideas? Has Alan sort of presented himself as an entrepreneur or something? He's kind of ended up getting Dragon's Den'd.
I imagine it's probably a bit of small talk, although when you mention the Dragon's Den thing in iPartridge, remember he does allow small business people to pitch him ideas while he lays out on the bed. I also like that he obviously doesn't think that the idea has any value, but let's not forget, and I don't want to jump ahead too much, Alan was about to set up a lanyard business called Lanyard 3000.
I think, as you say, it's a terrible idea, not enough mugs to buy them, that's never going to work, poor bastard.
Yeah,
he's not on board with this.
I wonder if he's been burned by novelty mugs after Sonia put his face on one side and a picture of a cat on the other.
Brings back memories of a tough time.
I also like that he describes London Gatwick as being just outside Brighton. Nice little dig at the fact that most of London's airports are actually miles out of town.
And then I think we have the first incident of Alan swapping D's for T's when he says literally.
Yeah, there's lots of this, isn't there?
That happens a lot.
The keen
He's gone full Dave Clifton.
Yeah, the keen partridge ear will be attuned to that and aware of the rank hypocrisy, which I think everyone can kind of enjoy.
I think before we get into that, Alan reveals that because the trip is fresh in the old noggin, he's decided he's got to do a podcast about it. But the key bit of information here is he hasn't slept for 36 hours. So you know it's going to go well.
Yeah.
And then he enters the host house, greeted by Seldom, or Seldy. And Seldom is quite excited, so Alan has to tell him to please calm down, sounding a bit like he's scared, but Alan is at pains to explain he's not scared, but if he sounds scared and accepts, Seldom is less likely to attack, so he knows he's top dog, and Alan is quite happy to let him be that.
Describing every day as being like a game of chess, big dog chess with Seldom.
I like the kind of emotional mind games that these two have to kind of play with each other, that Alan has to kind of feign fear around Seldom in a way to kind of like outmaneuver him.
Also a bit of fun where he basically seems to claim that he's invented the Countryside Alliance. He talks about the idea of being in the country as being in a club, and he likes that idea of exclusivity, you know, which kind of makes sense when you think of choristers and that sort of thing in the past. But then, he's sort of like, I wish it had a name, like Countryside Alliance. I like also that he describes sort of people that live in the country are posh people, and the people that work for them who are happy for that to continue.
So does that mean, does Alan consider himself to be one of the posh people?
Definitely. He lives in an host house and he has a cleaner.
I just had a few notes about him talking about why he went to LA before we get onto the Twitter stuff.
What, rebalancing his noggin? Go on.
So Alan opens the episode telling us about his reasons why he likes to go to LA. He sometimes he needs to get away from it all to rebalance mentally and physically. Now, I would think, you know, LA does obviously have its beautiful parts when you can get down to like Malibu and the beach, but I'm not sure. The way he's describing it is like he's gone to some kind of relaxing, holistic retreat or something. I think also in the first few minutes at this point, when we get the first literally, so he's swapping the D's for the T's, saying that he's picking up the kind of like transatlantic accent that he's brought back with him. Because he says that nowhere on earth can hold a torch to LA apart from maybe Dubai. And I thought further to that, I can think of anywhere worse to go on holiday than Dubai. It's just loads of massive buildings and kind of fake islands in the middle of a desert.
Absolutely Partridge destination for holiday, isn't it, Dubai?
It's corporate and it's business and it's Alan through and through. I also think that there's an element of that's the joke about him going to LA to clear his head, because he basically lives in the countryside where most people from cities would go to clear their heads. So 100%. It's like countryside life has just got too much. He has to go to a sprawling metropolis full of smog.
Yeah, and as transpires, it's like he does not make the most of his time in LA whatsoever.
No.
So is it time to go to Twitter to find out what other people have been saying they like most about Uncle Sam?
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
So we have Lucy and Hallett, who just says, I don't have an Uncle Sam. Classic case of people on Twitter just not understanding the question or missing the joke, which I enjoyed. Kate from York, her Uncle Sam buys her fags and booze, although crucially it's not actually her Uncle Sam. Takes on a slightly sinister tone as that's just a cover story if anyone just gets a bit too close to the situation. And then the final comment from Twitter is simply waffles, with the distinction being drawn between the British, which are potato, and the Americans, which are batter, and then the British, which obviously have poles and the Americans, which just have indentations, to which Alan draws a mildly amusing comedy about the British and American either being able to or not being able to kind of see through Waffle, at which point it triggers another comment in his own mind about him needing to do stand-up comedy, which is probably about the third or fourth time we've heard it in the series.
Gotta do stand-up.
Stand-up.
I mean, he does then sort of accidentally do a bit of observational comedy when he talks about his bad experience with somebody fitting a shower shelf that said they'd start at 9, but they actually just drank tea. They actually started at 10. They left at 2 to go to Screwfix and didn't turn up until 9:30 the next day, which I'm sure is an experience we've all had at one point or another.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of that new trope of the Gibbons era that Alan often trying to provide a worldly and everyman example of something, but it always develops to the point of specificity, so it becomes evident it's actually just something that's happened to him.
Well, remember as well, this comment which comes from Len in Hunstanton then goes on to say that he's just started horse riding, but we find out that essentially he's just been riding the horse to use the horse's spine to tickle his anus, at which point Alan starts to pull back on the comment for obvious reasons.
I love the way he reads it out. He gets to between the anus... No.
It's that classic thing about, like, when he was talking about the outhouse yesterday, where he'll start reading it and then you can hear his mind processing the gag and he has to kind of retract and draw it off.
Well, he never...
Yeah, and I like the fact he hasn't proofread
any of these. He never proofreads anything. Also, I don't know about you guys, but I've got a real craving ever since listening to this episode for the second time for potato waffles. Absolute school dinner classic.
They are waffly versatile. I like that Alan is sort of briefly considering relocating permanently to LA and talking about that. He says, I get off the plane and I just breathe. So I did a bit of research. According to Forbes, LA is the most toxic city in America and it's the 10th worst for air pollution in the world.
Especially at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I think the other week they had some of the worst air pollution in the world, yeah.
I did enjoy as well that he has to keep his voice down when talking about relocating to LA in case Seldom hears or gets wind, as if Seldom can understand English and knows what Alan is saying.
I like that, though. I like the way there's quite an emotive development of the relationship between him and Seldom. You know, he really doesn't want to upset Seldom.
Yeah. Did anyone make a note of Alan's fashion choice as he's walking down Sunset Strip in LA? I thought this was quite akin to Knowing Me, Knowing You, where we had a fashion feature and Alan kind of talks us through his, you know, Cruiser Araviste and Imperial Leisure looks. This very much kind of felt like it was cut from that same cloth. So Alan will be wearing Ray-Ban aviators, huge white sneakers and a leather fanny pack. Now, I'm aware that fanny packs or bum bags are, you know, more fashionable than they used to be. But I'm not sure that Alan Partridge wearing one round his waist with the sunglasses and huge white sneakers is a look that anyone wants to be contemplating.
I also like the image that he's striding up Sunset Strip in that get-up as well.
Yeah.
That tickled me, yeah.
There's then what I think is quite a weak gag where he sort of makes a joke about somebody in America putting two fingers up to him and he's like, I don't know if it was a V for victory or a peace sign, but either way, you know. Like, and it's like, obviously they're like, flicking the V's and he's misunderstood it, and I actually thought that's one of those few gags in this series that I thought is not up to the Partridge standard. Personally, I was a bit disappointed with that one.
Yeah, so just after Alan's been talking about sitting in the rush hour traffic soaking up the freeway, which I again really enjoyed, is when he talks about learning to use raised inflection at the end of sentences. I thought this was brilliant, but the way he uses the examples of doing it too early always made me laugh. Then he talks about getting better at holding it off until the last two words. So that also really makes me laugh. He actually does it on the last word, so he has to kind of rush through it. It's just, I thought stuff like that was brilliant. Because it's Alan, I guess Alan trying to be kind of down with the kids, but getting it wrong.
He's talked about raised inflections before as well, and he's not talked about them in positive terms. So again, also enjoying that there's some slight contradictions with previous Partridge, canon, but it's all good. At this point, we move on to a kind of piece of grammatical pedantry and the use of I and me. I've always been a big, big fan of Alan's kind of... grammar pedantry. There've been multiple instances of Alan kind of explaining how people kind of get grammar wrong, and I found this as enjoyable as any kind of previous example. I did fact check it with my mum, who's an English teacher, and she confirms that he is right. So segmented the audio, sent it over to her on WhatsApp, and she said, "Yeah, he's right." So can confirm.
I love that he went to all the effort of creating a whole kind of sting just to explain the difference between you and I and between you and me.
Yeah.
Also, just there, that was a bit Alan that you did, Nick. You were like, segmented the audio down under the desktop, opened WhatsApp, selected a new file, sent it to her. She would then have clicked on it to open it, possibly within iTunes.
I mean, I did enjoy with that whole section that obviously he overcomplicates it. So by the end of listening, you're just like, what is the rule supposed to be? Because the way he gives the examples is overly complicated. Yeah. So yeah.
And the payoff being a three-way dance as well. Like, how many times do you have a three-way dance? Like, so awkward.
Yeah, and he says on more than one occasion.
Yeah. Is it bath time?
It is. Yes. But let's just briefly talk about the fact that Alan has decided to stay on UK time for the duration of his trip just to maximise efficiency and reduce jet lag as well, yeah. Which I thought was great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... As ideas go, it's bad, obviously, but, like, I kind of, because LA, given the kind of city that it is, he can get everything that he needs to get at the times that he's going to be awake. So if he's ready for lunch at 3 a.m, there is somewhere that he will be able to go to get lunch at 3 a.m.
Yeah, well, crucially, at 4:45 a.m, he's ready for lunch and he goes to the 24-hour diner where he's surrounded by hookers, hobos and homos, according to Alan, in his own words.
I mean, obviously, the joke is very much like Alan has done everything wrong that he can do in terms of getting the best out of LA, because he's basically spent most of his time stuck in traffic on an 8-lane freeway. He talks about that, you know, going to 24-hour diners was fine apart from the darkness and the slightly odd clientele. I mean, in a way, I almost felt mildly sorry for him because he's kind of having the most depressing holiday ever. He's sleeping through the daytime, but it is the consequence of his own idiocy.
Yeah, so it's getting it wrong,
isn't
it? That
only goes so far.
Yes, it's 24-hour diners, but once you've had, like, a big night out or something like that, not just you're on UK time, therefore your only option is to dine at 4 a.m. with kind of all the other people that choose to frequent it. Also kind of enjoying being on the freeway. If anyone's been on the freeway in LA, it's horrendous. Yeah, it's stressful. And the traffic jams on those things are massive. It's horrible.
It also seems that it's been quite a lonely trip in that he's so starved for attention that after he's had his 4:40 a.m. lunch at the 24-hour diner, he seems to have offered to drop off 3 sex workers at their houses at the end of the meal.
Yeah, and the detail.
But the good news is he does get a good 30-second wet kiss from the older one, so it's all been worth it.
We did also hear a little earlier in the episode Alan and Seldom having it's Alan having a bath, but Seldom essentially like badgers his way into the bath, at which point Alan says, all right, your bath. I just thought the idea of Alan and Seldom sharing a bath together was a step too far, plus I never thought I'd see the day when Alan shared a bath with a dog.
Well, I don't know if they actually share it, because I think, doesn't he say, Seldom's in here now, so I guess it's for him. So I don't think Alan even gets in. That's purely for Seldom.
Alan's had his bath stolen outright by Seldom.
Just a quick thing on the conversation around jet lag as well. I don't know what you guys think of this, but basically when he's running the bath, talking about how tired and jet lagged he is, he says, nobody has jet lag worse than I do. When other people talk about jet lag, I can always beat them. I sort of win because mine is the worst. And I thought, I feel like there's quite a lot of truth in that. Like, people always seem happy to declare how much they struggle with jet lag. And I think particularly if you put it in kind of a media or a broadcast industry context, it almost becomes like a badge of honour or like martyrdom. Like, oh, I'm so jet lagged because I've been for meetings in LA or something like that. So I thought that's maybe kind of where the dig is going slightly there.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. And also, the worse your jet lag is, the further it implies you've been, and therefore the more important. Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Yes. Or, you know, or the further you've been for a shorter time. So you've flown to LA for 2 days of meetings and come back again or something like that.
I believe we've all been to LA. What are people's general thoughts about it? I'm not a massive fan. I spent like 4 days there and that was enough for me.
I've not been, actually. And okay. I have no interest in going, to be absolutely honest with you.
I think it's a fine place to get the most of it. I think you want to spend time there with people that live there and know it well, because it's such a car-based city. You want somebody that can basically drive around to all the best places, particularly when you're there just in a holiday context.
What I will say about it is that you can have multiple holidays there. So I went, when I went there, it was beautifully sunny, went to the beach, and then the next day we went skiing in the mountains. Mm. Mental.
Yeah.
I actually have a question for you, Tom.
Shoot.
As a fellow owner of a big dog like Alan, has Duke ever tried to get in the bath with you?
Oh no, he doesn't like baths or any kind of washing. Basically, he's not a fan.
But does like rolling in shit and mud and all of that stuff. Likes getting dirty, but doesn't like getting clean. Don't you have to power wash him?
I think power washing is a bit extreme. No, he likes, he quite likes to swim and stuff like that. But yeah, but baths and the like is not for him.
He's not street graffiti.
Get rid of that.
You know, like a big hose, hosing down.
No, it's a few gentle buckets of slightly warm water.
Just chucks
with
on
a
him.
with a special doggy shampoo.
I think it's time to move on to the next kind of sting or kind of...
I love this.
Yeah, I had no idea what was kind of happening or going on, because the kind of like, I guess, didgeridoo sound plays for quite a while. So you're kind of like thinking, what is this? Then it turns out that Pear Tree Productions want to hear from you if you're in a tribe. So
advertising exclusively in English on a podcast from Alan Partridge.
Also, no context, no detail, no explanation as to kind of why they're looking to do this or what would be required if you want to participate. The only question is, or the only request is that you leave your message in English and that it's short. So
obviously the humour comes from how ludicrous it is that anyone who would be eligible for this this show would actually be listening to the podcast. But why not? Let's throw it out there. If you're in a tribe and you're listening to Monkey Tennis, please do drop us an email at thepartridgepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
But keep those messages short.
Please keep them short and in English. Crucially.
Yeah, Nick, to be fair, the way they're kind of like canvassing, that is a bit like what TV production companies would do. They'd be like, if you're aged between 16 to 34 and live in Leeds, we want to hear from you, something like that. Like, that is kind of a production company type thing, but I don't think it works on a podcast that would have such a niche listenership.
Yeah. Well, why is that,
particularly
why is that
for tribes people?
Why is that exclusively been targeted at me? Why have you only told me that? Why not tell the whole group?
Because you were saying you thought it was weird, so I'm just responding to what you thought.
Oh, okay, fine. I think it is a bit weird, but fair enough, you've cleared that up. We now hear from one person that Alan wants to thank, who's been a real rock for him. I know it's a name that we're all from familiar with. Does anyone have notes on this?
Eric Dorfmeyer.
Eric Dorfmeyer.
Yeah, Eric Dorfmeyer, of
the
course.
The fixer.
Oh, sorry. Eric Dorfmeyer. I like to put the emphasis on the Eric, but that's just me.
Not Eric Dorfmeyer and not Eric Dorfmeyer.
Yeah, so it's Eric Dorfmeyer, who Alan met, obviously, in sort of the post-fallout of his BBC show where, as we know, he killed a man, or as Alan likes to put it, contributed fundamentally to his sad death. So Alan goes out to LA and meets Eric Dorfmeyer, a TV fixer. I did enjoy the kind of like trilogy of stories that kind of accompany Eric Dorfmeyer and Alan's continued gullibility.
Before we get into that, though, I think the key thing that we missed there is why Alan went to LA in the first place is because he paged Lynn simply, "What do now?" And Lynn responded with LA.
Yes, although she didn't actually mean LA, did she?
Exactly.
She meant to
write Lanyard Company.
Before we get to LA, then, Alan and his friend Daryl Flench. We've been hearing a lot about Daryl Flench in the Oast House, haven't we? We've never heard him in the kind of, you know, in the timeline before, but now we can't stop for hearing stories about Daryl Flench. So Alan and Daryl believe that they have the next big thing that's going to hit the lanyard industry, which is basically reusable lanyards.
Yes, which I mean, presumably that's the joke, but all lanyards are reusable. You take the little bit of paper out and you put a different bit of paper in, it's a new lanyard.
Yeah, this
surely.
Was 94, yeah. I guess, but yeah, it still seems perfectly plausible that they were. But unfortunately, the two fell out having a fight in a car park because they couldn't agree on the names. So Alan wanted to call it Big Lanyard and Daryl wanted to call it Lanyard 3000, which both bad, but I would have voted for Lanyard 3000.
Well, can we run a poll on the better company name?
Yes,
I think that's essential.
Of course.
Also, did you guys spot that Alan says that they were going to be doing... Alan says they were going to be doing online ads, but then he's also talked about the fact this was in 1994. I thought that all sounds a bit questionable, because how prevalent would have online advertising been in 1994?
Yes.
I'm not sure that I believe
Jeeves.
That.
Jeeves will tell you.
Or Alta Vista.
Thankfully, him and Daryl have managed to settle their differences since the car park fight, and Alan's now godfather to both of Daryl's dogs. There's one other very subtle gag that I enjoyed that we skipped over earlier, where he was talking about the differences in attitudes of business people in LA and the UK, saying that in LA you could do something like, you know, suggest making yet another Spider-Man movie and no one would laugh you out of the building, which I thought was really good, because it does always irk me that Spider-Man franchise basically gets rebooted every 2 to 3 years with diminishing returns, and no one ever seems to think maybe just give it a rest for a while. No, let's just keep making more of them. Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire, the other one, keep throwing people at it.
Although those last two Spider-Man films are very good and have done very, very well. I enjoy both of them, but the Andrew Garfield ones were rubbish.
So it's back to Eric Dorfmeyer, who is crucially, and I need to stress this, he is a TV fixer, although Alan did meet him while he was driving a cab, but that was just a hobby. He is definitely a TV fixer, right? And if we're talking chronologically, there is a this story is briefly interrupted with a sting for WD-40 or water dispersant 40. The reason it's called WD-40 is because it was their 40th attempt at creating the WD-40 recipe. I think that works because
that is true, by the way.
Yeah, that is true.
I didn't question the truth of it. I just think the humour is in how ludicrously inappropriate it is for that to be included in this. It serves no one, you know, any kind of like, it's of interest to no one, essentially. But yeah, I had to include that.
I to say, I also like that Alan has faith in Eric as a Hollywood fixer because he oozed LA and he had good big teeth.
Do you know as well that I think doesn't Eric offer to grab him a coffee? But in previous APU times, Alan has taken issue with the phrase grabbing a coffee. I think doesn't Psychic Simon say he's going to grab a coffee, and Alan says who grabs a coffee thinks he's a doctor in ER?
I mean, he's in LA now.
Yeah, he's happy with it this time.
So essentially there's a series of stories where Eric tries to set Alan up with lucrative TV meetings for significant amounts of money. And when Alan kind of questions that, Eric caves, inverted commas, and says, okay, well, if you just give me half the money and then you can pay the rest upon delivery. So there's a series of meetings where he's going to meet with some people at NBC, with the head of Thai TV. But none of these meetings come to fruition. But Alan, in some respects, is grateful because effectively he's been spared the other 50% of the investment. So actually he sees Eric as doing him a good service, although he is struck with tragedy when he meets Eric's twin brother, who informs him of Eric's timely death. And it would seem that Eric's fallen on somewhat hard times.
Well, his twin brother, not Eric. To be clear, Eric's twin brother has fallen on hard times. I loved that sequence of events that you've just gone through. In particular, the way with kind of each example, Alan says something to the effect of, it doesn't feel right. And then also when he's saving half the money, he's always like, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Does anyone keep a running total of how much money he's fleeced for by Eric / Eric's fictitious twin brother?
No. Is it $7,500?
Well, technically, it's $7,500 plus everything he had in his money bag, which he gave to Eric's twin brother for Eric's funeral.
Yeah, but in Alan's mind, he saved £7,500.
Yeah.
See, this whole section is a bit silly. Like, Alan, I can't believe that someone would actually fall for that to that level. But even though it's silly, it is a lot of fun. Sorry, just very quickly, the next thing on my notes is Cushion Wagon USA, but I can't remember what that's in reference to.
That's the show.
I've just written Cushion Wagon USA and I can't remember what it is.
Don't worry, I've got loads
of
notes on this.
That's the show Alan's trying to get a commission,
He's trying to get a commission, and essentially they're kind of probing him on what makes this different from any other trucking show. And Alan basically says cushions, which again just highlights how ridiculous this is and the fact that he has almost no USP when he takes his shows to commissioners.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Did you enjoy the way that he stalls in the meetings as well? Every time they ask him for more detail on the pitch, he'll say, "That's a good question, and I'm happy to answer it."
A brilliant tactic. And I like that he does manage to improvise with these cushions quite quickly. I think he mentions the cushions. Then when he needs to elaborate, he says that it's going to involve having the truck be full of cushions and that everyone he meets gets a cushion in the sort of Ellen or Oprah style of, "You get a cushion, you get a cushion, you get a cushion."
One show I was interested in and would see is Alan in the Hood, which is basically Alan in a posh hotel and then moseying on down to the hood. We've obviously seen Alan having form in this area, kind of going into kind of project style areas, and he references places like Birmingham and Glasgow as areas that he might want to go down to in terms of being in the hood. But yeah, I would very much...
Oh yeah, he's saying that, so the projects in America, he's saying that's the American version of Birmingham or Glasgow, yeah.
Yeah.
Some great bits about Alan's travel techniques here as well, that he never checks luggage, just takes the biggest carry-on wheelie bag. And he said that last time we went to LA, he actually brought his assistant, but she was a colossal style cramper, and he obviously put her into a motel while he stayed in a nicer hotel.
I know, obviously, when we covered Alpha Papa, there was some chat, I think we found in interviews and stuff like that, where the Gibbons and Steve and maybe Armando Iannucci said it would be so easy to take Alan to America. You know, they kind of did that with Mr. Bean, and they've done it with other sort of British comedy characters. It'd be so easy to pick him up and transplant Alan to USA and all the hijinks that they would get up to there. But, and I kind of agree with him, but when I heard in this episode him talking about Alan took Lynn to LA, I would love to see Alan and Lynn in LA. Like, doing a road trip would be so good.
Exactly. That's in my notes as well. I would love to see that as a TV special, Lynn and Alan in LA.
Just this bit where she goes to a casino, set loose on the blackjack table, wins $5,000, shouts yee-haw and starts handing it out to men. I love it. Didn't take much to change her.
No.
But she's later praying that she'd worried the money would change her. And as Alan said, and as you said in the intro, he says, "However much I want you to change, I don't think $5,000 is going to do it."
Yeah, so Alan's like kind of telling her basically to, I think he tells her to keep her knickers on because she's so excited. But it's a bit like, when you think about it, he's taking the shine of the fact she's won half a year's salary.
Yeah.
No wonder she's celebrating.
Yeah. The other thing is that we always know that kind of lurking beneath the surface is dark Lynn. So, you know, when Tony Hares dies and she celebrates that fact, any opportunity, but like given a slight inch, Lynn will like fully go into dark Lynn mode. So like by the end of this holiday, you could probably see that she becomes addicted to gambling and, you know, just like pounding the booze as well that's given out for free.
Do you think there's an argument that actually Alan has seen enough of Dark Lynn that he basically is responsible for keeping her on the rails?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and she does give some money to Age UK in the end as a sort of a penance for winning the money, but Alan considered this basically the same as her paying herself.
And it's at this point that we go to Twitter for the final time in this episode. So Alan is asking more about what you like about America. Paul says that he basically just likes long cars and Cadillacs. And then in one of the most dark comments I think we've heard thus far, Robin says that he likes singing the national anthem, although his wife is Somalian and sadly lost her family in a US drone strike. So one can only imagine what that situation must be like at home.
Also, the thing about the Cadillacs saying that their fins on the front were called kidney slitters, you know, it's kind of That's quite consistent with Alan in terms of delivering a horrible image in a chirpy tone, the way he talks about it. It's a bit reminiscent of the way he'd often interact with a darker or slightly odder, like, cooler on the radio show or something like that. You know, he'll be quite up and quite chirpy in his delivery, even though the content is actually quite dark.
And now that he's back in good old U of K, he likes to relax with, by getting back to some sort of more British thing. So a pint of Guinness, as he says, it doesn't get more British than this, as he sups the famous British brew Guinness, and then invites us to listen to the drawer on his wood burner, which actually is quite relaxing.
What I quite like about this is that the whole episode is about LA and American things, and then really quickly and suddenly he's just basically done with American things and just gone, actually, I really want a lasagna, Italian, Guinness, Irish, that he says are British things. He's basically completely done with America on an instant right at the end of the episode for some reason.
And it's interesting as well that obviously he's chosen to go to what sounds like, quite frankly, an awful pub, but it's kind of quintessentially British. So, you know, it's got a bald man with a dangerous dog. There's St. George's bunting. And I thought the menus in a maroon, white, clean vinyl folder was quite an evocative image of a certain type of pub as
Very
well.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
But I assume that this, like so many instances, is further proof of Alan kind of talking on a subject, but actually not really having much kind of investment in it. Or it's, you know, kind of a manipulation to serve the narrative of the story rather than him actually being invested in it. Because I can't believe that Alan would ever choose America over his home of Norwich.
Yep, hard agree. Yeah, it's kind of almost like he's just, what have I been up to? What's coming up that I could twist into a podcast? And this time he happens to have been in LA. So that's the end of episode 12, I think, unless anyone's got anything else.
I did try to keep a tally of the kind of transatlantic pronunciations we get from him in this episode, swapping the T's for D's. So I've got literally, Atlantic, residue, Rennid convertible, Larde. I'm not sure if I've missed any, but yeah,
Siddy.
It is quite
he
ironic.
Says Siddy as well.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably loads more, but yeah, it's quite ironic when you consider he lambasted Dave Clifton for similar pronunciation many years ago.
He did indeed. Okay, so we're on to episode 13 of From the Oast House, subtitled Convict. It's time for Alan to have coffee with a convict. He's very, from the word go, he's very hell-bent on making the point that he gives a bit back. Lots of references to his Christmases in the soup kitchen again. I did put in my notes at this point, I wonder if later in the episode or in a later episode, there'll be a reveal that it was a token gesture or perhaps an hour, or that he said he does it at Christmas because there's no alibis to corroborate his story.
I do like the fact that he kind of has to comment and say, he says kind of, you know, earlier I suggested that I did eight when in fact it was closer to three. At least I think it's three, actually it might have been two.
No, he says it's closer to three. I've done it twice.
Yeah, okay. I think I did the
and
second one.
And then he
one.
Says, I think I did the second one. So actually, he's probably done it once, yeah. If at all.
Brilliant.
But there's something key you missed out here. He says on an earlier codpast.
Yes, oh, I really? Got that as well. Yeah, oh, he says codpast.
Yeah. And again, the whole Oast House series is littered with these kind of like mangled linguistics, yeah. Which is a lot of fun. I was also going to say, so he's at the very top when he's talking about giving a bit back, and he's then explaining he doesn't mean verbal abuse unless if he's in a car, and there's a nice little payoff to that later.
Nice, good link.
And of course, we've seen his kind of tendencies towards, I guess, in essence, road rage in something like Welcome to the Places of My Life when he's shouting F off at what transpires to be a child riding a bike.
And I think there might be some intel here into why he's only done the soup kitchens once. He says that he loves the banter, which primarily seems to be making fun of the fact that they don't have houses and he does.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's perhaps why he's not been quite as welcome back, or maybe he just hasn't bothered.
I enjoy that that's the punchline to every joke. That they've got, you know, several instances of how they kind of rib him. The only comeback he's got is, don't you have a home?
So he mentors 1 hour a week with Daniel, a troubled teen, but in much the same way as he thought he did eight soup kitchens, it turned out to be two. I worked out that he's been too busy to meet Daniel for the last 6 weeks.
He's been busy, yeah. But they do have lots in common, to be fair. I mean, they both like hula hoops.
Yeah, both wear baseball caps, both laugh at Snapchat videos, and both like ready salted crisps.
There's a nice sting at this point where Alan has to comment on his own diction, where he's talked about ex-offenders, but he's concerned that it sounds like sex offenders, so he's just kind of clearing that up. But he also feels the need to stress that essentially you can't rehabilitate a sex offender, because essentially for them, everything needs to be sexy.
I would say it definitely does. I mean, I'm sure this is very deliberate, but yeah, in the prior to the sting, it definitely does sound like he says sex offenders to make sure that joke scans.
Yeah, I went and listened back as well.
I think it's also worth pointing out, just before that that sting came in, that Alan is also at pains to say that his regular mentoring sessions are not a social experiment or the basis of a heartwarming TV documentary. And I think we've seen this many times before in the APU. Alan saying what it isn't means that's exactly what it is. So that's the real motivation, or one of the motivations behind this.
I tried to investigate the charity that he is doing this for, Best Foot, a charity that Charlotte, a woman he knows, runs. The closest I could find online is there's a charity in Devon called Best Foot Forward, Dance in Devon, which is, and I quote, a dance for falls prevention program offering evidence-based dance classes to improve the balance of older people at risk of falling, which is somehow seems even more Partridge than the fictitious version.
And by George, Charlotte is some lady.
Yeah, so...
She had a twinkle and Alan melted.
Yeah, I mean, Alan, we'll probably revisit this several times, but Alan is clearly keen to foster something more than just a business relationship with Charlotte. And he's getting a bit of a ribbing from the guys down at the Racquet Club, who are kind of asking, you know, what she's like. And Alan likens her to Amanda Burton, who I kind of knew the name, but I had to look her up because I couldn't remember exactly who she was. Anyone remember Amanda Burton?
Yeah, she was Silent Witness. Years ago,
she was Silent Witness. Yes,
she was Silent Witness. She was Silent Witness. Yeah. She is
Detective
the
Inspector Witness.
I enjoyed that she is quite softly spoken, and sometimes Alan can't hear what she says, and so Alan kind of goes on to give an example. I wondered
for about a minute as well.
Yeah, I wondered, Tom Stab, as someone that's seen Tenet, is this essentially what you have to deal with whilst watching Tenet?
Pretty much, yeah. I'd go along with that.
So, we get Alan basically gives us an example of being softly spoken for about a minute here. So the key things I pulled out were exciting synergies, in terms of cost, seven-figure package, talks with Idris Elba, and bit of a wanker. So yeah. I thought that was quite fun.
Do you think that is actually alluding to some sort of real-life conversation Steve Coogan's had, a film-related conversation?
Maybe.
Of some kind.
Possibly.
That's a good way of working it in. I do think this would be a great medium to just get digs in at your, like, famous friends or failed business relationships, wouldn't it?
I did enjoy the bit as well where Alan is talking about how he came to be involved with the charity. So he was basically a charity event dressed as a pantomime dame. Was
a very busty pantomime dame, as he likes to point out.
There's a charity auction for NCHOC, the Norwich Chamber of Commerce, I believe.
So
that's basically where we get the reveal for his real motivation. So the documentary potential aside, that he was essentially struck by Charlotte, so he volunteered.
Shaz.
Yeah, so Shaz. I guess my question to the group, the next bit is we have Alan about to go to his first meeting with Daniel, and he basically keeps trying to get Charlotte to come to the meeting. So my question is it because he fancies her or because he's anxious and scared that he doesn't want to meet Daniel alone?
It's the first choice.
90% the first one, 10% the second one.
Okay.
Yeah. Hard agree with Adam there. Yeah.
Quick second question of the group. Have you ever used NAP to mean not a problem? As Alan repeatedly does.
He actually just says nap.
Yeah, he does say nap.
Towards the end of that section as well, yeah.
I did enjoy that the first meeting didn't go well. Alan opted for a tough love approach, minus the love.
He refused to speak until Daniel stood up straight. Daniel didn't stand up straight. End of meeting.
it was a long hour. So I think, doesn't Alan start in subsequent meetings, Alan takes to swearing more than normal to make him feel at home. So I enjoyed the, I'm having a bloody cuppa and a fucking scone.
Yeah. And he tried a good cop approach in a previous meeting where he basically dropped a couple of magnums on the table and said, get your laughing tackle around that, skinny boy.
I mean, I don't think it's any shock to anyone that Alan would be a terrible mentor to anyone.
Mm.
No, doesn't listen to any of Daniel's answers, completely zones out when he talks about his favourite grime artists. But I did like the line where he does try to maybe give Daniel a little bit of help to, you know, try and keep him off the drugs by saying, why do heroin when you can get off your tits on nature and vintage cars?
Yeah, and then goes into an extremely specific drug metaphor about seeing a kingfisher in the Norfolk Broads, which I enjoyed. He does at least, when Daniel's talking about his favourite grime artist, politely zone out. So, you know, he's not completely cutting it
gently
off.
I might do that for the rest of this podcast, to be honest.
Also enjoyed that he says Daniel had a grumpy face, but it's not his fault. He's had a grumpy life.
And he's giving him kind of careers advice, suggesting that perhaps he might want to consider it a career at the Carphone Warehouse. And he obviously knows that Daniel enjoys, grime. So he kind of suggests another type of rapping is rapping in an Amazon warehouse. and then finally, it's when there's nothing else left. It's just join the army.
Because they will take anyone.
It's not exactly the same because the setup and delivery is slightly different. But a lot of this reminded me of the time where Mark Corrigan goes to meet that guy who steals his phone in Peep Show.
In terms of the setup.
Like they go to a Greasy Spoon and it's like Mark has no idea how to talk to this guy and is nowhere near on his level. I kind of imagine it kind of being a bit similar to that.
There's some really nice mispronunciations again here, as Alan says, Skepa the Skeptics.
Yes.
And then also describes the Welsh actress as Catherine Zeta-Jones.
I did like that Michael... Oh, God, what's his name? I've totally forgotten
Michael
it.
Douglas. Michael Douglas.
Yes, the Grey Crow. He's still there.
Yeah, that's the second time he's described him as looking like a grey crow.
Yeah, just a great description all the way through. Catherine Zeta-Jones gets together with Michael Douglas, who looks like a grey crow. She's 50. He's, what, 90? He's American. She's from an angry country called Wales.
I'm going to do some live Googling. How old is Michael Douglas? He is 75.
Ooh.
75. You reckon Zeta-Jones is 50?
I think she's a bit older.
I think she's probably 56.
54. Okay, she is. She's 50. She's bang on 50.
Oh, one out of two. I apologise. He explains at this point how he could never co-present with Carol, and then goes on to imagine an entire scenario with her, escalating into revealing that back in the day, it was a pocket dial that meant that he heard her having sex with a narcissistic sports pimp lover.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I don't think that's an imagined scenario. I feel like we're getting a retelling of a blow-by-blow actual argument that has happened in the past as well.
Blow-by-blow?
Yep. Is it time for Grandad Graham?
Yeah, well, I think this is a classic Partridge bit, isn't it, where the point is about Daniel's dad not being there, but Alan's immediately turned it to be about him and his granddad, who was there, but he just died of, you know, old age, and so at some point he kind of left his life, whereas Daniel's dad just hasn't been present in his life, but that's not really the point that Alan wants to make.
And he describes Daniel here as well as a 19-year-old mixed-race bad boy.
Yeah.
So it's quite funny.
They're off for their 8th meeting, so Daniel phoning Alan, and you get a kind of insight into the way that Alan is prepared to speak to him. So he's like, yo, Danny boy, usual place and ting. And then Danny's obviously saying that he might want some Fanta. He's like, Fanta? You need vitamin C? You might have open sores. Just making sure that Daniel has enough vitamin C should he get some open sores. And he's giving him a reminder about the paper mill in Wookie Hole that he's obviously been giving him grief about, because he really is keen that he gets his kind of career sorted. So he just says, "I'll snooze you lose. See you fucking later, nutbag." and so Alan is off to a Greasy Spoon, which is English for a bad cafe. And I have to agree, I do think the term Greasy Spoon usually is associated with a subpar cafe.
The see you fucking later, nutbag, that's essentially what he does in the school speech episode as well, isn't it?
Well, he just calls them nutters.
Yeah, but it's that kind of thing. It's a great example of how Alan thinks he has to talk to young people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lovely scene here where we become, again, familiar with how comfortable Alan is with aggravation and confrontation went from the safety of his vehicle, but crucially he backs down whenever it moves outside of a car. So yeah, you're trying to bum me with your car, he shouts to someone. And then bizarrely, your horn is to warn, not rebuke, which is one of the weirdest things that anyone's ever shouted from a car, surely.
I mean, he's got a point that the horn is there to warn you of your presence, whereas most people on British roads use it as a way of basically saying, oh, go fuck yourself. But actually, it should be there to say, I'm here, you're going to hit me.
Just slightly before that, we get the second confirmation of what this mentoring is really about for Alan. He says, the ability to make a real difference to someone's life, and if it helps the brand along the way, then so be it.
Yeah.
On the car aggression bit as well, it's basically a kind of a rerun of a joke that we've seen before in Latter Partridge. It turns out that he's shouting at a lady in her 70s, most likely, in a similar way to him shouting at the girl on a bicycle in previous Partridge.
Possibly even 80, I think.
Yes.
So we're kind of privy to the meeting that he has with Daniel, but Daniel has not given him permission to play out his side of the conversation. So in a kind of like fairly familiar Partridge trope, we only hear half of the conversation, but obviously that's all we need to kind of support the joke. So it turns out that Daniel has been stealing again, which Alan is not happy about, especially as what he's stolen is a TV. But because the brand is Sanyo, he's furious that he's gone to all that effort to steal something of such subpar quality.
Well, actually, has he been stealing, or is this the ploy to get the TV, to get the iPad, to get the Alexa from Alan? He said that he's acquired these things from a friend. This is what I took from it, is that he said he's acquired these things from a friend, and Alan's like, no, you shouldn't do that, because you know, you could go to prison, or you know, go back inside or whatever. Here, take mine. Like, I think he's using it as a device in order to get those things from Alan. That's what I took from it anyway.
Yeah, there's definitely the discrepancy about whether Alan has given him things in the past. He's saying, I'm 200% sure I gave that to you or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that,
yeah, so he has given it to him, but it's basically just a ploy to get more stuff from Alan. But I did really like the line, you were prepared to go back to jail for a Sanyo?
A bad hi-fi.
There's a nice callback as well. As the conversation dries up, you get Alan's signature noise that he likes to make when conversation dries up. So the long sigh and then the little noise at the end.
It's the kind of cough laugh, isn't it? Well, it's a few days later and Bestfoot have decided to kind of cut ties with Alan. We're not really sure if that's because of Daniel or Charlotte's intervention, but obviously Alan is not overly happy about that, because inadvertently that means his opportunity to have any form of relationship with Charlotte has also come to an end.
And he does admit he's not on her level, which, again, there's been a few of these kind of things, like when in a previous episode he said he was too old to play Bond, that he's kind of, it's a little more self-aware, a little bit more self-critical these days than perhaps he used to be.
You say self-aware, although maybe what any normal person would do is provide a thank you card to Charlotte, say, you know, thanks for the experience, I've learned so much. No, what he does is he basically gifts her a great big kind of gift basket, including a £50 voucher, so he's gone way over the top with his gesture of thanks.
So the main reason that Alan thinks he isn't on her level is because she's dated Jez Butterworth. That for him, that's the key to it. So I'm going to admit here, on the first listen, I just assumed that Jez Butterworth was like a made-up character name, because I thought that's a bit of a ridiculous name. And then upon Googling,
well,
obviously he isn't. He's an incredibly famous playwright, screenwriter and director. Did you guys know that or not know that?
No.
Was it just me being a book?
I didn't know that, but I did do a bit of research and yeah, as you say, famous playwright and script writer. He co-wrote Edge of Tomorrow, which is great.
Yeah.
He co-wrote Spectre, which is meh. And he co-wrote Ford versus Ferrari, which I have not seen.
Yeah, and also plays like The Ferryman and Jerusalem were incredibly successful and famous. So it does pay to do your research, basically.
And so, yes, when he's turned down by Charlotte, he says, I appreciate her honesty, but I certainly won't be helping any more young offenders. So, yeah, the real motivation laid bare for all to see at the end of the episode. Did anyone also notice that there were multiple references to Amazon in this episode, which I don't know if that's something that has been baked in because of the nature of the podcast and the relationship with Audible? But you would think
it's quite
Audible,
subliminal.
Well aware of Amazon.
Yeah, it's quite subliminal and subtle, because I must admit, it didn't really, like, I didn't really connect it when you say it, but yeah, the Alexa wrapping at the Amazon warehouse, like there is several mentions of it.
Yeah. I feel like it's, I think it's a little bit similar to like if you're watching a film made by 20th Century Fox and there's a news broadcast in the film, it's always going to be Fox News. You know, it's that same kind of parent company tie-in thing.
Good spot.
Anything else for this episode, Convict?
Yeah, well, I thought it's worth recapping basically Alan's actual motivations behind his mentoring sessions. So he used it as a way to try and initiate a relationship with Charlotte, that it might help build his brand to be seen to be doing good work, and he was also hoping that it might lead to a documentary. So he doesn't give a shit about Daniel, really, and as Alan does say when he signs off, he says, "I certainly won't be helping any more young offenders." So it was never really about helping the youth, was it?
He's failed on all three aims there as well. Even in his own selfish way, he didn't get Charlotte, he didn't get a documentary, and brand Partridge has been damaged, I would say, by this experience.
And I was also going to say, I'm keen to see what you guys make of this in terms of the overall Oast House series. But for me, this felt like one of the weaker episodes personally. I think the first half was much better, like laying out the context and the multiple reveals of why he's really willing to do it. And then the actual interactions with Daniel as described or heard, I thought were a bit weaker. And I was thinking about it, in essence, it feels a bit like a bit of a one scene or a one sketch idea stretched out over a whole episode. So to have this concept of this in something like a Scissored Isle style Partridge Show, I think could be brilliant, but because, you know, it would be like a little 3-minute insert, like when he goes to the party and takes ecstasy or something like that. I think for a 22-23 minute episode, it was a bit lacking for me,
or a segment on This Time.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not the first time we've seen him kind of, you know, opt to deal with disadvantaged youths or what he sees as disadvantaged youths as well. So it's not even particularly new ground. I do think it was a bit of a slight episode. Yeah. A little bit padded out.
Okay. I think that pretty much brings us to the end of the episode.
Yes, it does. So if any of you have got thoughts on this episode, on Oast House or on Partridge in general, get in touch with us on Instagram at Monkey Tennis Pod, Twitter at The Partridge Pod, Facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, email ThePartridgePod@gmail.com, or leave us a voice note on WhatsApp and we might use it in a future episode. 07923 600017 is the number for that. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, then please do rate and review us on your podcast provider, and also maybe shout us the cup of coffee that we're constantly asking for. ko-fi.com/monkeytennis is where you can do that. We'll see you next week with another double helping of Oast House, and we'll find out if dreams really do come true. Until then, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
I'm going to log on to Amazon and look for a Sanyo hi-fi.
This is the beauty of podcasting, the freedom of the medium.
Kukumpa.
Monkey Tennis.
Bring, bring.
Fireworks. Dumma kebab.
Trees are my pawn.
Monkey Tennis.
Ready, steady, fuck off.
Scratch me!
Are you being served?
Monkey Tennis.
Excuse me, your dog's taken my dog's stick.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
Monkey Tennis.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, 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 absolutely.
Generally, I think new ideas are bad.
Monkey Tennis.
Why not consider chips?
You must come and stay in the barn.
Fuck off.
Riddle me that, you nutters. Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk.
Nah.
Monkey Tennis.
From the Oast House.
Keep it down, love.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.